Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own life and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listen on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Okay, Anna Doris, take over.
Hi, I'm Anna Doris. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'm going to introduce Julie. She is been working. I've been working with Julie. I met her in these COVID rooms of 5:45. I can't remember, but we've become very good friends. We're working together. She works an incredible program. I'm impressed with her diligence, her stick-to-itness, and her discipline, which are key characteristics, I think, that we need to move forward. And I admire her greatly. So, Julie, you take it away. It's my honor to be working with Julie.
Thank you, Anna Doris. Hey, everyone. I'm Julie, and I am a very grateful recovering alcoholic. And I'm really honored to tell my story tonight to you guys. This is the second time I've ever told it, so I am a little bit nervous to tell it in front of so many people that I respect in these rooms that have gone before me and have a lot of years. But I hope I can get out what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me today. And so just so you guys know, my sobriety date is January 5th of 2020. So I just celebrated over a year of sobriety. Many of you know this is not my first go in AA. I've been in and out of the rooms for 10 years, but this is the first time I've been able to achieve a full year without by doing it just myself, and I'll get into that in a little bit. And then my home group is the 7:30 a.m. NABA group, and they really I love those people, and they start my day off on a positive foot, and I'm so grateful that my sponsor told me about that meeting. And then, of course, you met my sponsor, Anna Doris. So I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. And so I feel really, really blessed that I met her by listening to her, you know, talk in meetings. And so with that, I will start. So I was born to two really great people. I really got lucky. When it comes to my parents, they were college sweethearts. And, you know, their goal when they met and married was to have a family and work hard and, you know, live the American dream. And they didn't really come from a whole lot. They didn't come from extreme poverty or anything, but they didn't come from any wealth or anything like that. But they worked really hard. And so my mom was an elementary school teacher, first grade, and my dad, a chemical engineer. So they met, born and raised in Kansas City, Kansas, and met at KU, but my dad's first job took him down to Louisiana, where I was born. And so they really, you know, this is back in 1980, when I was born, they left their entire network in Kansas City, born and raised, and moved to Louisiana. It was just them and me. And this is, you know, I'm sure lots of people on here remember the days before cell phones. My mom had to call. When she wanted to call her family, she could only call long distance. And, you know, at that time, they didn't have any money. They were hardworking and saving and just getting started with the baby. And so they were very lonely. I don't think they realized what they got themselves into when my dad took that job or started his career. But I was the first of two, and I have two younger brothers. And we were raised, my dad was raised in a very strict Irish Catholic family. And so that's what his goal was for us was. And so we went to church every Sunday, you know, and on Christmas and Easter. And I was raised, you know, we were baptized in the Catholic Church, and we'd go up to Kansas City because it was my dad's, you know, he has a little OCD and he wanted us to be baptized by the same priest that married them. And, he very much into tradition and a regimented lifestyle. I mean, he's a chemical engineer. So, I, for all intents and purposes, was a really good kid. So I made my parents my higher power. They were my higher power probably until I went off to college. Even though I was raised in a church with God and everything, really, I really thought that they were the higher power, and that's kind of how it was supposed to go. And maybe that was the right way. I don't know. But I just did everything that they told me to do. And I really didn't, think for myself in a lot of ways growing up. It was just, you know, their way or the highway. More my dad, not my mom. You know, she was your typical elementary school teacher, but, they were accomplishing a lot throughout their career. So I had a lot, I had big shoes to fill, I felt like. And, so I was always striving to make straight A's, and I would go into my closet when I get home from school a lot and study. And I would study for hours just in my closet. And looking back, that's not a normal childhood. I didn't have a lot of friends. I did have friends, but I didn't have a lot. I wasn't in any sports or anything like that. I dabbled in things, but then when it would get too hard, I would quit. And that was kind of my MO. I'd want to get into ballet, and then it would get really hard and I quit, or gymnastics. And then we'd have to start doing stuff on the balance beam, and I'd quit. So I quit a lot of things. But that was okay. I made straight A's and my parents were happy with me. My brothers are a different story. I love them. We're still very close, but they were all, my mom will tell people she doesn't know how she got all three of us because we're all three very different children. Me and my youngest brother, have struggled with, addiction issues. My middle brother has coasted through life, unfazed. I don't know how he got it, but, you know, hats off to him. So anyway, I don't remember my first drink. I get jealous when I hear people tell their story of how they remember their first drink. I'm like, how can I not remember my first drink? Because I loved drinking so much, but I don't. I remember some of my first parties, and loving them because, you know, like I said, I was a shy kid who went in my closet a lot and sheltered myself from the outside world. So, you know, going to parties when I was a teenager to me was just, it was fun and, you know, I was around the popular kids and, you know, I got a boyfriend, but like I said, I was still a very good kid. It wasn't until my senior year, my dad, his job transferred, us up to Oklahoma. And so our lives completely changed. And this happened, it seemed to be like overnight, like one day it's like, okay, we're moving to Oklahoma. And most kids would be really sad about that. I was actually very excited because A, it was closer to Kansas City and my parents had been homesick my entire childhood. So I was happy for them. And B, I'm like, this is a new start. And maybe I could be popular now. So my goal then, all my goals in life shifted when I moved to Oklahoma. I didn't want to be the nerdy straight A kid anymore. I wanted to be the popular girl. And I really accomplished that my senior year of high school. I loved that feeling of attention and, you know, being the new girl and kind of being mysterious. And I became very flirty. And, you know, that was fine for your senior year of high school. I went into college at the University of Oklahoma, joined a sorority. And that's really where my drinking kind of took a turn. I was away from my higher power. My parents were my higher power. Remember, I was away from them. I was all alone, and my higher power then became alcohol. I lived for alcohol. My first job in college was partying and drinking, and my second job was studying and school. So not at all the person I was growing up. And it was just like, you know, within a couple years, I was a different person. You know, at that time in Oklahoma, it was 3-point beer. They didn't serve 6-point beer. And so I was able to get away with drinking a lot of beer in a night without getting too drunk. And I always stuck to beer because that's what my parents, they were beer drinkers. My parents were not wine or hard liquor people at all. They're beer drinkers. And they, you know, I saw them drunk a couple times, but they weren't alcoholics. I mean, my dad, towards his later years, started drinking a little too much beer, but they were always functioning and successful, and they weren't alcoholics. And so but I did know that my grandmother, my mom's mom, was an alcoholic. And my mom would always warn me about that growing up. She'd be like, you know, don't, you know, it runs in our family, you know, don't ever try to drink too much. And I don't know if that was ever foreshadowing, but, I did end up drinking too much. So I, eventually got kicked out of my sorority. I was a social chairman. So not only did I go to the parties, I planned them. I mean, my life revolved around parties. I planned them. Well, I drank too much in college, at a party one time, and the police came, and, you know, I got a few drinking tickets, and, which at that time was kind of common. At least I brushed it under the rug like that. But my sorority didn't think so. And so they kicked me out. And, that was a huge blow to my ego because I was very proud of being in this specific sorority. Looking back, I just, it makes me sick. But that was my life at that time. And so, my parents during this time have moved from Oklahoma to Louisiana. My dad was getting promoted and on his career path. And so after college, I moved back down there because I had chosen a major that was not very easy to find a job in, public relations. And I got a minor in history. So, and I wasn't going to go to law school. So there weren't a whole lot of job options out there for me. So I moved down to Louisiana with my parents, and I got a job in politics, and I was a political fundraiser. Oh my gosh, that opened up the floodgates for my drinking. If anybody has worked in politics or dabbled in politics, the life on the inside of that world is nothing like I've seen since I've gotten out of it. I mean, the drinking, the partying, the fundraisers. And you go to these fundraisers and it's everything's free. And it's all very glamorous. And that's where I started to get into the wine. Because I'd go to the, you know, I was working these events, but I was still drinking. So I was, you know, young, and maybe I could have a glass of wine here or there. And that worked for a while until I started to get addicted to drinking wine. I didn't know it at the time because I was so young and all of my friends were still going to the bars and doing all of that. But I was really addicted to the wine, and it didn't take me much to get drunk. And so that's where my blackouts started. So around this time, I'm 22, 23 years old. My parents start to get worried about me. But of course, my ego is like, oh no, I'm fine. You know, I'm just drinking like a normal 22-year-old. You know, you guys drank when you were in college and right out of college. And I was, you know, I'm smart. I'm not extremely smart, but I'm smart enough. And that can be a dangerous place to be in because I can manipulate myself out of situations. That's one thing I've worked on here in AA. So I'm able to kind of talk my way out of things, when I was drinking, and brush things under the rug and make things look prettier than they actually are. And so, of course, you know, it wasn't my drinking. It was just that, you know, I moved to Louisiana because I didn't have a job, and I got this job. And now that the political season is over, you know, now it's time for me to get a big girl job. And so I moved to Chicago. That's the story I told everybody. I had friends in Chicago, and, you know, it was a big city, lots of opportunity. And one part of my brain actually believed that story. Like, there's a lot of opportunity in Chicago, but then there's another part of my brain that's like, I want to continue drinking like this, but I can't drive. And if I live in Chicago, there are cabs and there's the train and it's perfect. Then I won't get a DUI. And so that's how I thought. Like I had this, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde that they talk about in the Big Book. I had that going on in my head. Like the story I could tell you that I actually believe, but then there's another story that I'm not telling you. And I compartmentalize things. And so I did move to Chicago and, I bought a one-way ticket. My dad drove me to the airport. He cried the whole way. I didn't care. And I've since made amends to him for that. But, I was on my way, you know, at that time, I think I was 24 years old. I'm on my way. I am moving to Chicago, the big city. And I was so excited. And all I could think about was the party and the glitz and the glamour and the hotels. And guess what? I got a job in the fanciest hotel in Chicago, the Peninsula Hotel on Michigan Avenue in the sales department. And I thought I was so cool. And I was making no money working in Chicago. And all my friends were kind of doing the same thing. You know, they didn't want to grow up. So we were just living in this big city thinking we were cool, going around, you know, working during the day and going out at night. And none of us were growing up. My first few years in Chicago was fun, but this is where my alcoholism started to not work for me anymore. And I hear this a lot in the rooms where people say their alcohol, or their alcohol worked for them until it didn't. And this is where it started to not work for me. And my life started to go downhill real quick. You know, Picasso talks about his blue period. This was my blue period of my life. About 2 years into Chicago, I got fired from my first hotel job, because I was drinking in the lobby and I passed out. And my client that I was with had to put me in a cab and take me home. Of course I tried to lie my way out of it whenever they called me into HR the next day. I've since made amends to them, by the way, but, that was a big blow to my ego. I had lots of drama, ran through lots of relationships, and everything was always everybody else's fault and never my fault. I just was so focused on me. I was that self-centered, selfish alcoholic that all I cared about was the next party and the next outfit I could buy and what are you wearing to this? What are, you know, like, just that was my life. It was so very, very shallow. And the sad thing is I didn't see a way out of it. And my solution then became getting into other outside issues because the alcohol stopped working for me. So what do? You go on to the next higher power, which looking back, it was actually a next lower power. But I didn't know that at the time. And, my life got darker and darker, and I felt like everybody kept leaving me. I felt like friends kept moving away and they stopped calling me, and I didn't get it. Like, I was like, what's going on? You know, like, what's wrong with these people? They're so selfish. Like, they don't call me anymore. They're leaving, they're moving. I'm like, I was the selfish one. I brought nothing into anybody's life. Nothing. I'd be your fun party friend. That was it. I had no goals of getting married, having kids, nothing like that. I did want to make a lot of money, so I did at least keep some jobs, except for that one I did tell you about. I kept some jobs, but other than that, my life was super shallow. And so when I was 29 years old, I got the gift of desperation, but I didn't go in the right direction. Instead of walking into an AA room, which I should have, that gift of desperation brought me back home to my parents. So at 29 years old, I'm living with my parents again. And they took me in, but they weren't happy about it. But they also didn't know what solution there was for me. And so I call these next years my roller coaster years because my life would get really good and then it would go downhill and it would get okay again. And then I'd go deeper downhill. And it was just like that. My drinking, stopped surprisingly because I met a guy who was in AA. So, I moved back to Louisiana and I meet this guy and he is my solution. He's handsome. He's 4 years older than me. He comes from a very wealthy family and he had been sober for 2 years because he had gone to a very fancy rehab in California, that his dad paid for. And I had found my solution. That was it. I was like, there we go, you know? And so I got sober. I quit drinking for him. Of course, I'm not an alcoholic. I just had like a little drinking problem. But you know, that's that part of my brain. The other part, like, I know like it's probably worse than that, but I could manage life just using half of my brain. So I did. And that half was like, you know, my ex is, he's my ex now, but my fiance or my, the guy I met, was my higher power. I moved in with him after 3 months of knowing him. He had a small 7-year-old daughter, not the best decision. But I was actually a very good person. We were both sober and we treated her, you know, she was very well taken care of. The sweetest little girl. I fell in love with her. And we actually had a nice sober relationship, I will say, for the first few years. He told me he was going to meetings every Tuesday, Thursday in person. I didn't really care. You know, we were living in a nice fancy house and, you know, his dad provided, you know, everything that we really needed extra on top of, life. So we were very busy going to football games and trips and you name it. And since his family was such a big deal, I got lots of attention and I just, you know, of course me, like I loved that. But I was still selfish and self-centered. We weren't doing anything in the community to help anybody. We were just two selfish, sober alcoholics living with each other, coming home, talking bad about people and, you know, like just not doing anything good with our lives. Basically like two junkies living together, just we weren't using. About 3 years into our relationship, 4 years into our relationship, no, 3 years into our relationship, he calls me at work and he says, "Hey, I have to talk to you." And he's like, "But I can't meet you anywhere. We have to meet somewhere like in secret." And I was like, "Okay." It was very bizarre. So we meet at the LSU campus, like somewhere random. And he's like, "You know, I have been doing some really shady stuff at my law firm and I'm in really big trouble." And I'm like, "What?" Like, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what that means. And he then lets me know that he is probably going to go to jail. And I was like, "What?" So, you know, that's his story. I'm not going to tell it, but I will tell my part in that. I was, you know, obviously my life came, you know, like crumbling down. This dream world that I thought I lived in was not a dream. And looking back, that was God getting me out of a bad situation because he, you know, not only did I live two lives in my head, he also was living two lives. And there was a whole life he was living that I did not even know about. So I left. I moved out. I got my own apartment. And you would think that then, like, I would really throw myself into AA. No, I was still sober, but I was a dry drunk. I did start going to AA meetings. I did get a sponsor. But the only thing I was doing was checking boxes. I wasn't in it emotionally. My heart wasn't in it. You know, I was just checking boxes because he said he had done it and that was his solution. So I was really just kind of leaning on what he said and I had nowhere else to turn. But I needed a higher power and I wasn't finding it in the rooms because I wasn't giving it 100%. And so of course I start dating again and I find another higher power, in dating and, start drinking again because I think, oh, no guy's going to like me if I'm sober. So I have to start drinking. And I remember that first drink, after 4 years sober, I went out with some guy. I don't even remember his name. It was one day and I, ordered champagne because I wanted to look classy. And, I took a couple sips and I was fine. I went home and I was like, "Oh my God, I'm not an alcoholic. Like, what? like, I'm not. And so, 3 weeks later, I was at a girls' night at a Mexican restaurant. I drank too many tequilas, and the next thing I know, I'm puking up my brains in the parking lot. So it takes me about 3 weeks. So anyway, I'm going to start to get to the solution part of my story. So as you could tell, my life is going downhill. I end up moving to Florida with my parents again, and that's when I'm like, the third time I'm living with my parents as an adult, I decide to get it together. I felt so low and like such a loser, and just that bottomless, like I contemplated suicide. I don't know if I ever would have done it, but I do know I was going to die, whether it was going to be, I don't know what it was going to be, but I didn't feel like my life was going to last very much longer if I kept drinking. I was drinking alone in my apartment in Florida, and I had no friends. It was very, 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 very dark. And so I finally walked into AA and decided to surrender. And that was in January 1st of 2019. And I remember I had been crying the whole day before, and I walk in and I just didn't even care. I look like a mess, and I raise my hand for a white chip. I'd never done that before. The 4 years that I was sober and when I was kind of like going into AA, I was just kind of on the outside looking in. This time I was in, and I got a sponsor, and I started listening to what everybody had to say, because I had tried so hard so many times to do this on my own and think that I was better than AA or better than everybody else. And I was a miserable person on the inside. And then my life on the outside was starting to become more miserable and more miserable. And you guys took me in. You guys were the only people that were at that point wanted to take me in, because nobody liked me. Even my parents at that point, I don't think they would have taken me back again. It was bad. But you guys were there, and I started coming to meetings. I went to a Friday night meeting every Friday night in person. It was a newcomers meeting, and I sat there and I shared, and we talked about steps 1 through 3. And I made friends in that room in Celebration, Florida. So if anybody knows that town, that's the Disney town. So lots of fun people in there. I made friends in that room that I never thought would be my friends. They were super cool people. I'm still friends with them to this day. And they're so awesome. I worked the steps with a sponsor, and she had a sponsor, and we would do sponsee nights. We would go to pizza. We would go to Disney World and walk Disney World. And I actually realized, like, there's sober stuff to do out there, and people actually have fun. And I slowly started to get my life together. About 6 months into the program, I decided to take a trip to see a friend in Chicago, and that's when I relapsed. I started to get resentments in the rooms just because I did, and I wasn't sharing with my sponsor that I was getting those resentments, and I relapsed. First, I smoked a little pot, and then when I got back to Florida, I smoked a little bit more pot because it was legal there, and then, of course, a couple months later, I relapsed. And I know people have said it, and I will say it again. When you come into AA and you start working the program and then you relapse, that feeling is very, very, very dark. Because not only now am I feeling that depression and that, you know, that hangover and that dark feeling, but I've also let the only people I feel like that took me in when I was at my lowest, I've let them down too. And I hated that feeling. I hated that feeling. And then I drank more because I hated that feeling. And I finally realized I can't do this. I can't. Like, I have to work harder. And so I came back into the room. So my new sobriety day, like I shared in the beginning, was January 5th of 2020. My job moved me to Atlanta. And I was nervous about leaving. And this is Queen of Geographics. I was actually nervous about leaving someplace. it was, you know, with my sponsor and with the help of people in the program, they supported me through that move. And then I came here and COVID hit. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And of course, Zoom, you know, Zoom was going on. And so I get on Zoom and, you know, the blessing of Zoom is that I got to just close my eyes and listen to what people had to say. And I heard people talk, and I loved what Anna Doris, I would go into meetings. It was the 7:30 quarantine and sober meeting that PM that I would hear her. And I just loved what she had to say, and she kept it very simple. And that's what this newcomer just really needed. You know, it's almost like she talked in bullet points, you know, the surrender steps, the cleanup steps, you know, I just loved how she thought. And so, and I wasn't turning my camera on. So I asked her to be my sponsor, over chat without my camera on, 'cause I was too nervous for whatever reason to show my face in these rooms on Zoom. And she, accepted. She didn't know what I looked like. She didn't know who I was. She just said, yes. Okay. You know, she already had a lot of other sponsees, but she's like, you know, I guess I'll take one more. And I am so thankful she did that, because she could have said no. You know, she didn't know anything about me, but she said yes. And it has been life changing, because she has held my hand through this process, and I want what she has. And so, you know, she goes to meetings in the morning. And so I started going to meetings in the morning, and, you know, I want to be a lady of dignity and class and grace. I want to have genuine friends. I want to have a fulfilled life. And I don't want to depend on alcohol as my higher power. You know, I found a higher power through you guys and through my sponsor. And, you know, and I've worked at myself. I didn't lean on a fiance or a man. You know, I did this year. I did it myself. And I'm really, 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 really grateful to her, to you guys, and to everybody that does service in these rooms, because without you guys, I definitely wouldn't be here. And so, you know, the slogans right now, they keep me sober. I have to have it simple. I get, you know, when it gets into the weeds, I get really, like, you know, crazy. I like the AA literature, and I like that about NABA, because they just stick with the AA literature. I've gone to other meetings where they start reading Brené Brown, and they get off top, and that's great. But I have to keep it, I have to be disciplined, I have to keep it really, you know, I have to go back to that little girl that's sitting in that closet, just keeping it very structured, because, you know, that's just how, you know, I've come to accept that that's myself. You know, I am how I was raised. That's, you know, I've tried to change it. It doesn't work well for me. And so when I can keep it very simple and structured, that works for me, and I can stay sober. I'm only a year. I'm still learning. I hope to be in this program for the rest of my life, but I do have to take it one day at a time, and stick with my sponsor and stick with you guys. But, you know, I pray every day. Like I said, I have my higher power and friends in the program now that I can call and text and share if I'm having a good day or a bad day, and that has really made all of the difference. And so, I'll tell one story of when I first came into AA, a friend that I met that I never would have been friends with on the outside world. It was this little girl, she worked at Disney, and she sounded like Mickey Mouse. And she's so cute, and she would come into the rooms, and my first sponsor would tell me to get numbers. And I hated that. You know, I was I'm shy, and B, like, and people think, oh, you're shy, but remember, like, I have two sides to my brain. So this side is shy. This side is like the outgoing personality part. But deep down I'm shy. And so, and I just, you know, when you're in recovery, I hated reaching out to people. And so, but I did. I followed her instructions, and I got people's numbers. And then I would, you know, give them my number. And she actually one time got into a terrible car accident. And she was in Orlando away from all of her family in North Carolina, and she was probably college age, 20. And she called me on a Friday afternoon. I was like, "Hey, Julie, I'm in the ER." She told me the ER. She's like, "This is what happened. And I don't have anybody here. I don't know who to call. And I just thought I'd call you." I'd maybe talked to this girl 3 times in a meeting. We had exchanged numbers. Whatever reason, she decided to call me. And I immediately, I'm like, "Yes, I'll be there." And so I went and I sat with her because I heard that that's what you guys do for other alcoholics. So I just listened. And so I went and sat with her. And I sat with her all evening. And it was pretty traumatic, the accident she was in. And she hurt someone pretty bad that was on a motorcycle. And she wasn't drunk. But she had been in her head so much when she was driving, she wasn't paying attention on the road. And so, anyway, I drove her home and, I went home and I thought like what a gift that was. Like, nobody ever has called me to help them. That was actually a gift for me. And then, you know, that was a couple years ago. She just recently called me 3 weeks ago, and she was like, "Hey, I just wanted to call you and just tell you how much that meant to me. I'm still sober, but I think about that a lot." And I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Well, I just want to tell you, like, thank you for calling me." And that's what putting phone numbers in my phone means to me today. So if I've told you, like if I ask you for your number or you take mine, it's a special thing. At least to me, it's very special because I had that happen to me. And I'm just very thankful I was sober and I could drive and I could meet her there and be there for her. And that's just a gift because it gave me confidence is what it gave. I'm like, I can actually I'm actually useful in this world. And then as far as working the steps, I know I didn't get too much into that, but I'll tell you, I have now worked the steps 3 times. I worked the steps in my early 30s, like I said, but I was just checking a box. It was not deep ingrained to me. I was just saying yes. Nothing really meant anything to me. That when I got to the amends part, there was just one big thing really weighing on my mind that I had done when I was 19. So I got that out to someone else, and that did feel good. But I didn't realize what the steps really meant and what they were supposed to do. So then the second time when I was in Florida, I took it a lot more seriously. And the steps are not easy, at least for me. It was not easy. I really had to let go of a lot of things. And if anybody's read the book, Drop the Rock, I mean, I had to let go of a lot of resentments. And they still pop up, I'm not going to lie. But then I remember, okay, Julie, you let those go. I've forgiven my ex-fiance. I actually made amends to him because I did use him in that relationship for money and for attention and things. I made amends to him. And, sometimes, not every time, but sometimes it just takes two to tango. And I was a part of that relationship. And so I'm not 100% innocent. The amends part was very hard for me. That was probably the hardest step. I made amends to my dad. And the great thing about making amends is the people on the other side typically don't, they're just like, "Oh, thank you. That's so nice." "Yeah, keep doing what you're doing." All my dad said was, "Thanks. That's just keep doing what you're doing. I'm really proud of you." I had 2 bad amends go bad, and I don't, those people probably didn't want to hear from me, but it did make me feel better. I am really sad that those relationships have ended, but it is what it is. They were friendships, and I deserved it because I was really nasty to 2 people in my drinking. Drinking and texting was my big thing. Now I meditate on a daily basis. I think everybody meditates differently. I love, my sponsor told me, taking naps and laying down and just taking it easy can be considered meditation. And I do that. And that helps me, like I said, I have to keep it simple. I have to keep it simple. And I keep meditation simple. And I just clear out everything and I talk to, you know, I talk to God in my head and he talks back actually. But I think that it's different for everybody. But I just say, like, if you are new to the program, I mean, I'm new, but if you're newer, just coming in, you know, keep coming back because you don't get the answers overnight. I continue to learn. I continue to hear things I need to learn. And I hope I never get to the point where I am 10 or 20 or 30 years in the program and I'm like, you know, I'm an old timer and this is what y'all need to know. I hope I continue to say, like, what can I learn from you? Because I think that's life. I think if you stop learning, then you stop growing, and then what's the point? So, you know, that's my experience with the steps. I'm not currently sponsoring anybody. I had two sponsees this year, and both dropped me. That really hurt my ego. But I have talked to the people about that, and that's also a learning lesson from God, lessons I needed to learn. So I think I was holding on to some sponsees for my ego, and I needed to, you know, I still need to learn some stuff. So I continue to learn about the whole sponsorship thing, too. And I know God will hand me a sponsee when it's the right time. But until then, I'm just going to keep coming back to the program and working my program and praying to my higher power and reaching out to you guys. So with that, I think I am done, Tim, if that's okay.
Yes, yes, indeed. Thank you for sharing the light. It was a beautiful story. Isla?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Tim. And thank you so much, Julie. You're delightful. Thank you for sharing your story with us. You did a great job, little sister.
Thank you.
I'm Hattie. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Julie, thanks so much. And, you know, you have really brought a lot of light to our little groups and meetings that I go to. And I love your honesty. And what's been really infectious is your excitement about AA. And it, sometimes when I hear you share, I'm like, oh, I get excited too. So thanks for being here. I really appreciate you showing up.
Hey, I'm Marianne. I'm an alcoholic. And Julie, it's great to hear your story. I've seen you at several of the meetings that I go to. And so it's nice to know, because I'm almost at a year, because I came in. I should have a year, but I don't, because I relapsed, but I almost have one. And I just had my first sponsee who fired me. So so I can relate, but she was very, very kind about it. But it is, I what I heard you say loud and clear is that you don't want to, you always want to constantly be learning, and that's me. This is a, you know, this is a process, a journey. It's a lifetime. And I heard that, you know, very much, and your enthusiasm for working the program. So thank you.
Hi, Julie. I'm Shanika, grateful alcoholic.
Thanks, Shanika.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. We have a lot in common, actually. There's a quote by Denzel Washington, and it says that people don't like you, don't worry about it, because that just means you're light. Is disturbing their demons. It has taken me this long in life to actually understand that and believe that. And your light is so bright. I mean, you have touched a lot of people and you don't even know it. And I'm just so happy that we met in Napa and then our paths crossed. You're very infectious, especially your passion about the program, about living a sober lifestyle, about, you know, just sticking yourself out there and doing it no matter what. You know, that's very inspiring to me. Just want to say thanks again. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Shanika.
My name's Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's just so well spoken, and I was trying to learn from you how you were doing that. That was just really wonderful. Thanks.
Thanks, Lauren.
time.